I graduated from Tufts College Medical School, 1948, magna cum laude. I did 2 years of internship at Worcester City Hospital. I then served 2 years in the United States Navy. And I did my neurosurgical training at the Massachusetts General Hospital from 1952 to 1956, where I came here to practice neurosurgery. And I joined Dr. J.T.B. Carmody and Dr. Robert Johnson, who were in practicing here in neurosurgery before I came.
Just the nature of the project, as much as I understand it, is just to hear your sort of perspective on the history of medicine since you've been practicing. My just curiosity would be around sort of what it's been like for you to see the technological changes and to practice and...
Well, technologically, neurosurgery, which has been my specialty, has advanced tremendously over the years when I first started practicing. We had nothing like CAT scans or MRIs, things like that. So the ability to make diagnosis with the technological advancements of just the fabulous. You know, I would never dream that 20, 30 years ago you could get a picture of the brain and see the brain.
Yeah.
Now you can have actually through instrumentation and imaging, you're going to have your surgery guided through see on the screen what you're doing on surgery. And the surgical techniques with the use of the operating microscope and treatment of tumors and aneurysms that were at one time thought to be inoperable in my time and now certainly everyday occurrences. So the when I started neurosurgery, if someone had a brain tumor, if they survived the operation, it was considered a miracle. Now that you know, it's really everybody should survive their operation. There's no room for error. Everybody should survive their operation. The mortality, morbidity rate, with the advent of better diagnostic techniques, better instruments, better anesthesia, have all, as far as neurosurgery, made great advances. I'm sure it's the same in other specialties, cardiothoracic, general surgery too, but getting just involved in neurosurgery, I've seen most of it in neurosurgery.
Maybe could you just talk a little bit about sort of when you first started practicing, what the field was like?
When I first started practicing, there were just the three of us here, and we basically covered all of Worcester County. I could remember going up to Webster, going to Clinton, going to Leominster, going to Gardner, in consults to see patients. As the hospitals here developed, we tended to have our patients brought in, especially nowadays with helicopters, so the patients are brought here faster than we wanted to get out there. And the facilities to operate were, of course, not as good. I always quote this one story to having been called out to go to Clinton Hospital one night to the young boy that had a head injury and had become rapidly comatose. And it became obvious what he had was an epidural hematoma, which is a blood clot on the surface of his brain, and it was bleeding from a major artery. And I thought we didn't have enough time to get him back to Worcester. They had the operator on right then and there. And we did, but one of the problems were there were just two wall plugs in the operating room. And we had to have a suction, and we had to have a light that we could see in, and we had to have a cautery,
wow,
so we could cauterize the vessel. Well, we needed three pieces of equipment that required electrical outlets. We only had two electrical outlets, so it became a nightmare for me to try to stop the bleeding and see. So eventually we were fortunate enough to be able to do it. But it made me realize that we probably should not be doing that type of surgery out of Clinton Hospital in the middle of the night. It would be easier if I had just had the patient in the Worcester. The neurosurgery, you know, the quotes, the old days were a lot faster, and because we didn't do as much, We just would do basically biopsy of a tumor, take a little tumor out and call it quits. Now we try to get all the tumor out.
Mm-hmm.
And surgery takes much longer, and which was far better results. I think the biggest change as far as the practice of neurosurgery is the same as practice of anything else in medicine. The climate has changed now. We used to the malpractice threat that became apparent many years ago as doctors were held in esteem now is not considered to be that don't have that much esteem anymore. They're considered to be tradesmen rather than
mm-hmm.
than professionals. The government control of HMOs, the Managed Medical Care Programs, and with all the hassle they have to go through just to order an X-ray, you need approval from several people just to get something done, which delays everything. I'm not sure it cuts down costs. I think they hire more people to do things to prevent you doing something.
Yeah.
As far as neurosurgery is concerned, you know, we didn't have neurosurgical residents. We had surgical residents that rotated through neurosurgery,
mm-hmm.
Particularly at City Hospital, St. Vincent's. City Hospital, when I came here, was the leading neurosurgical hospital at the time. That's where most of the neurosurgery was done. And then over a period of time, St. Vincent's became much more involved in it. And I would say St. Vincent's became the leading neurosurgical service. And then when UMass came, a lot of the neurosurgery went to UMass. And now a lot of neurosurgery has been done at Memorial Hospital, so I think it's getting pretty well spread. All hospitals have good equipment and capabilities of doing good neurosurgery. We do have a residency program now in neurosurgery, so we do train neurosurgeons where we hadn't before, and that certainly, I think, gives us better patient care because we have residents that can know what they're doing and know about neurosurgery. And it's gratifying to us to be able to teach and get these young people trained and to hopefully make them good neurosurgeons. Where there were three neurosurgeons at my time, we now have seven, and I'm not really full time, and an eighth neurosurgeon will be joining the area in July over at the medical school. And there is a good working relationship between the neurosurgeons at the medical school and the neurosurgeons that are not in the medical school. I see get along fairly well and cooperate and help each other quite a bit. What else can I tell you?
I guess you know, maybe just talk a little bit about your training and sort of when you were training, what it was like.
Well, you know, I don't want to get too technical because when I was training, the way we made diagnosis, other than history and physical, which is a classical way, radiology has always been an important part of neurosurgery. We did what we call newborn cephalograms or ventriculograms, where we would pump air into the nervous system or spinal fluid and get pictures of the ventricles that way by putting air in. It was a pretty painful procedure and also dangerous. And then angiography became into play actually before I was a resident. And the injection of dye into the blood vessel again gave us further pictures to enable us to see tumors, the vascularity, better see ocular venous malformations, aneurysms, and became easily visualized and located with the advent of angiography. And then somewhere in the 50s, we started using the first isotope nuclear scans, where an isotope be injected and a tumor would light up and say, oh, gee, we can see that there's a tumor there. It lights up on the scan, and these were dots and dashes on a piece of paper were the first scans that we did. And those did not help us. They helped us make a diagnosis of the tumor. It didn't really give you any more anatomy about it, except to say, because it was frontal lobe, temporal lobe, with fairly gross anatomy. aneurysms then became more obvious and then became more accessible, and the use of the microscope became even much more accessible and able to be handled.
I'm sorry, I'm getting
an interview. Following the isotope scans and the nuclear scans, the next phase were CAT scans, which were then computerized tomography, as you know, and really done with tomograms put through a computer.
When would the CAT scan have become available?
CAT scan, I think you would guess data on that. CAT scan became available in the 60s. I'd say probably around 60, came around to be around 65.
Okay.
And it was a big hassle. This was an expensive piece of equipment. How many hospitals should have it? You know, and finally, we used to send our patient down to Boston to get a CAT scan.
Mm-hmm.
Then finally St. Vincent's got the first CAT scan. And then finally City Hospital about the next time with a big hassle. All sorts of meetings with the medical registration board, the people had made decisions that they had CAT scan. I remember saying what they need was what you had to get, what they call a certificate of need. You had to prove that you needed one. I remember saying in a meeting, if penicillin got invented today, we'd probably have to get a certificate of need to use it. So it was ridiculous if someone would come with a head injury to City Hospital and had to be sent over to St. B's to get a CAT scan.
Yeah.
And wasting time. Well, evidently, soon after, every hospital got CAT scans. Certificate of need to a thing of the past. And lo and behold, then an MRI came into view. And the MRI, did not get a certificate of need. I don't think it's been a hassle about that, because there are two available, two MRI labs in Worcester.
Mm-hmm.
The one over at Central Mass Imaging and the one at Somerset, which is a private one. The Central Mass Imaging is owned by three hospitals. And since there's one cooperative venture between the three institutions, have done very well and right along well. So it shows you if you get the right people, you can get a good deal of cooperation even for three hospitals. And they've got two MRIs down there. I think it would be nice if we had in-hospital MRI, because we could we'd have to send sick patients across town to MRI and be able to touch at night. Where neurosurgery is going from now, I think that we're going back into surgery for Parkinson's disease with stereotactic devices, image-guided neurosurgery, where you can guide your instruments through a computer and MRI sophistication, so you can actually see where you're going to cut, see the cortex, see the brain on your screen. All those things that are coming in the future for our neurosurgery going. So I think it's neurosurgery is a ongoing progressive field which improves all the time. But I think not everything else does. Cardiac surgery does. It's not just neurosurgery. Just, I say I happen to be more involved with that, so I see the changes and I live through the changes.
Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to go into medicine?
I think I knew I was going to be going to medicine when I was in grade school. I think I had my eyes set for being a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
With that high school, I don't think there was any specific. One time, I just wanted to be a doctor. So I thought I'd like to help people, more or less try to help people, save lives, or all that histrionic stuff. I don't know. It's just I felt this is what I would like doing, and now it's going to be 2 years old, and I've enjoyed every year of it, and I feel I made a very wise choice as a youngster. It was during the World War II years that I was in college, and so I went into medical school relatively early after my 2 years of college, and I didn't know what I really wanted to do as a specialty. I graduated medical school at that time, World War II was over, and I took and called them with a rotating internship, which you could rotate through various specialties. And I had the opportunity of working with Dr. Carmody in neurosurgery, and that's when I decided this is what I wanted to be, I wanted to do. And when I finished my internship, I went off to the Navy, but at that point, I did get have interviews done, and while I was in the Navy, and I got my appointment at the Mass General Hospital for when I got out of the Navy, and that's how I ended up in neurosurgery, and ended up coming back to Worcester, because I had promised Dr. Carmody I would come back, and there was a job here for me, but in the interim, Dr. Johnson had joined Dr. Carmody, and they still wanted me to come back and join them, because Dr. Carmody's planned on retiring shortly thereafter. So I felt he was the one that got me interested in neurosurgery, and I promised him I'd come back here, and I did. He died just a couple of years ago, 2 years ago now. Dr. Carmody had it at the age of 91, and actually he was the first neurosurgeon out of Boston. All neurosurgeons we started were in Boston. So he was the first neurosurgeon that came out of the Boston area. And he was the first neurosurgical resident at the Mass General Hospital.
Wow.
I followed him at the Mass General Hospital, probably some of which was his influence.
What about your sort of experience with him made you decide that you did want to do neurosurgery?
Well, I got interested in brain function, and I was interested in neurology. In fact, it was tossed up whether I was going to be going to neurology or to neurosurgery. And I thought, well, I'd like neurology, interested in the diseases of the nervous system. I thought neurosurgery was something you could do about it. Now, you can make a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis or a stroke in those days, and there was not a lot you could do about it except map it out where it was in the brain or what part of the nervous system it was. But neurosurgery gave you a chance to do something about it if there was a surgically correctable lesions. I felt neurosurgery was the good part of neurology. I always liked neurology, but neurosurgery was something you could do, and that's what got me interested in neurosurgery rather than just neurology.
I guess, what would you say is sort of in the most important change that you've seen that would be a positive change?
Well, in Worcester or neurosurgery?
Well, actually, probably both things.
the positive change has changed medicine in Worcester was the advent of the medical school.
Uh-huh.
With no doubt.
Uh-huh.
That medicine, medical care has markedly improved, and since the advent of the medical school, it made a big impact on the practice of medicine in Worcester. And to my feeling, to the better. I think getting a higher quality of medical care as a result of medical school, because the medical school has set standards which the other hospitals try to keep up with, and the other doctors try to keep up with. So I think that has been a great bad change in the in my recent years of practice. I think the biggest change has been the arrival of other neurosurgeons to Worcester. I felt that Ivan was responsible for most of the neurosurgeons coming here, really starting with, after me came Dr. Davidson, and I brought Dr. Davidson here, and then Dr. Wilkerson came as chairman of the department, and he was my choice, and then Dr. Galevich, he was again my choice, and then Dr. Gillicuddy was brought here, again our choice. The other two neurosurgeons that came to UMass, evidently were Dr. Wilkerson. They were all our choices, but at that point he was directing the show. So I think the advent of neurosurgery was so the arrivals of neurosurgeons, I feel directly responsible for our blame or credit for them. I think we attracted high quality neurosurgeons to us. I think the neurosurgical. I think the neurosurgical staff or group Worcester is of a high quality, and probably, I tell you this judiciously, I think it's the best group of doctors in Worcester, as far as anyone's specialty, that get along well together and high quality work. So I feel a little bit responsible that I brought these people here, and I'm very satisfied with the people I brought here. I don't want to blow my own horn. I've been here a long time, and a lot of the procedures that were done by me were firsts for Worcester. I did the first aneurysm surgery in Worcester. No one else was doing aneurysms. I was the first one to use the operating microscope. We were doing surgery for Parkinson's disease way back in the 1950s. The laser for neurosurgery was brought here by me. I got the first laser at St. Vincent's Hospital, and then went to Memorial Hospital. The first carotid endarterectomy in Worcester was done by me. Dr. McCree always claimed he did the first one. Those are things that I've done. I was involved with trauma. Trauma was a big part of our treatment for many, many years, both at City Hospital and then at UMass. So I did a lot of traumatic care and did a lot of surgery and for subdural brain injuries and reconstructions. And as a result of which, I did get the first award for being a trauma surgeon of the year when they started giving the awards over at UMass, which was something I was very proud of to obtain.
What year was that?
Dr. Wheeler and surgical staff at UMass did honor me by appointing me professor of neurosurgery, which is more of an honorary title, which I thought was, I appreciated very much, because I was recognized for the services I had performed in teaching and taking care of patients. What else do you want to know?
Oh, I'm just curious what it was like to be the first person to perform some of those procedures.
Well, I was the first one in Worcester. I wasn't the first one that blew them in the world, but I had been trained at a very good institution at Mass General Hospital, and we were doing those procedures when I was a resident, but they just weren't being done here in Worcester.
Uh-huh.
And then by going to meetings and lectures and courses, I learned more skills and a lot of reading and doing I was doing aneurysms before the days of the microscope, just operating loops. The microscope made it a lot easier. I can remember doing my first basal artery aneurysm way back ago. Yeah, it was at Memorial Hospital. With no microscope, I don't know. The patient didn't do that great, but she survived. Not to leave the hospital anyway.
And what about the history of surgery for Parkinson's disease? Because that's not done now.
It's back in the fold. We were doing surgery for Parkinson's disease, primarily making lesions in various parts of the brain using somewhat of a stereotactic apparatus. But then the L-Dopa medication came out for Parkinson's disease, and that seemed to relieve many of the symptoms. So surgery came to be less, went off the boards, and surgery would primarily be done for tremor, for Parkinson's disease. And with the advent of medication, the medical medicine could control the tremor. The rigidity was not well controlled. Now with better stereotactics and recording, again lesions are being made in the brain, usually the globus pallidus or some parts of the thalamus, and with a moderate degree of success, fetal adrenal transplants were in vogue for a while, but I was never impressed that they were doing much except making a lesion where they were putting the adrenal transplants. And maybe it was just making the lesion that was doing it, not necessarily the adrenal transplants. But here in Worcester, the new neurosurgeons coming here in July has been trained in Parkinsonian surgery, and hopefully will develop a Parkinsonian treatment center here at the medical school. Dr. Weaver is doing his surgery for epilepsy, which has been another recent addition to the type of neurosurgery we're doing here in Worcester, which was lacking. Tumor surgery with cranial base surgery has now become a sort of subspecialty on itself. But Dr. Davidson's been a pediatric neurosurgeon. We've been here a long time now.
Are there any changes that have occurred since you've been practicing that you think are negative?
I think the changes have been the government control, the effects of malpractice risks. I'm not sure that managed medical care is good for the patient. It may be good for the economics, but is it good for the patient? I don't know. I think time will tell on that. HMOs, are they good for the doc, good for the patient? I don't know. Being a little old-fashioned, I think private practice or individual care is maybe better, but the having a primary care referring physician, I think maybe that's an advantage. I don't think that's a disadvantage. Just seeing some of the red tape that people have to go to is a hard part of it.
What about for doctors practicing now?
I think it's very hard to be a solo practitioner. Mm-hmm. I think you have to be a part of a group in order to survive. There is seemingly a lot more competition for patients than there used to be. You know, you always considered if you did your work well, you didn't have to worry about getting patients. You worry about getting too many. Now there seems to be a concern about getting enough patients, I guess.
Yeah.
It used to be that the hospital was always crowded. People were overflowing, which wasn't really, you know, a great way. We operate in a patient with a ruptured disc, and they now get out of the hospital in 24 hours. If they stay in more than 24 hours, you think something's wrong. Years ago, they stayed a week.
Yeah.
And that certainly has been an improvement, and I think, in care and cut down costs. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel that the controls have to be a little more rational. I can't see a person bringing an 80-year-old lady for cataract operation at 6 o'clock in the morning and have her go home at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
did anyone in your family practice medicine also?
I have two children that are physicians. I have one son that's a doctor. I have a daughter-in-law that's a doctor, and I have a daughter-in-law that was a nurse. So as far as my offspring are concerned, I have most of my family is involved in medicine.
Yeah.
None of my father wasn't a doctor, none of my brothers or sisters were. I was the first,
uh-huh,
first doctor in my family.
Uh-huh.
Probably do four others. None of whom have gone to neurosurgery.
Has anything changed for you, I guess, just in terms of lifestyle in the course of being a neurosurgeon?
Well, you used to be, when you were, and still is, I guess, I'm not a night call, a weekend call anymore, but many years ago we didn't have residents. When you were on call at night or weekend, you were on call, and it wouldn't be unusual that you were up three or four nights a week, up all night or most of the night, taking care of trauma patients or patients that went sour, all by yourself. Sometimes it got very lonely out there. Now with the use of residents, of course, it's the screen for you and makes life a little easier, but still, the people that are on call for weekends now still, you know, have a weekend of every night, or when they're on call for you mass trauma, they can be there many nights they're not home sleeping. So that has changed for me because I'm not doing that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But with the arrival of residents, it has taken a little bit of the strain of being up all night. The residents were up all night rather than the attendings.
Do you have any stories that, you know, are just things that you remember from practice that stay with you?
Oh, I can remember some stories of Dr. Johnson's stories, and now telling one of the residents as was using a suction on the brain to suck away the blood, which we do, and I remember Dr. Johnson saying to one of the residents, "Hey, Doc, be careful with that sucker, or the suction bottle is going to be smarter than you are." That was one of his famous statements. I can't think anything off the bat. That's a little off-color. Yeah, that's a little off-color one.
Anything else, though?
I said I've had the pleasure and enjoyment of working with excellent colleagues and Dr. Comedy. Dr. Johnson is still alive, one of my favorite people. We're very close. And Dr. Wilkinson, Dr. Denlevich, Dr. Gilicari, Dr. Davidson, Rita, Dr. Latosky. I'm very fond of and totally enjoy my association with them. I've enjoyed my association with our residents too, who will be graduating this year, Dr. Young, and Chris Troop, finish up this year, maybe get 5 years, and I've enjoyed working with them. I hope that they've enjoyed working with me.
Are you sort of partially retired?
Well, I would say three quarters time, and I am not doing any real major cases.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still operating, and I would say this is probably my last year doing surgery. Whether I'm going to stay on and just see consults and see patients and help the other guys out a little bit for another year after that, I haven't decided.
Mm-hmm. What's it like to be sort of coming to the end of your career?
My wife thinks it's great. I feel a little sad by it. I've enjoyed my career, and I certainly feel I just don't want to hang around and do nothing. My wife hasn't decided to stay working some capacity. I'm just going to retire completely, and I have decided that this will be my last year for operating. I say nobody wants a 90-year-old neurosurgeon operating on their brain. At least I wouldn't.
I don't have any other questions.
Well, I've got to meet with Dr.
Okay.
Myers very shortly. I'm having met him very late.